Welcome to the podcast. It's dedicated to making you a faster cyclist, the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast. I'm Coach Jonathan Lee, and here with me is our coach, Chad Timmerman, our head coach, Chad Timmerman.
Hi, everybody.
And our CEO, Nate Pearson.
Hello.
And this is where we get you answers to your cycling or coaching related questions. You can submit them to us at trainerroad.com/podcast. You can find a form on there. You can fill out your questions, send them to us. You can see the latest episode, see different content, because generally if we have a good conversation on here or touch on a good topic, we'd like to expound a little more and write an article on that. So you can see links to that on there. You can find those at blog.trainerroad.com too. This podcast is published on iTunes, on SoundCloud, on Stitcher, or wherever else you listen to your favorite podcast. So you can find and share it there and also leave us reviews on those platforms. And we'll take any and all 5-star reviews. And if you want to give us a 6-star review, you can leave us a 5, then email iTunes and let them know that you suggest 6 stars just for us. So I'm sure that'll put us on the featured page maybe, right, Nate? That'd be cool.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to kick things off with Bill's question. He says, thanks for all your great work, guys. My question is, if I have a little extra money to spend, what would you recommend? These are fun questions when we get to spend other people's money. I like that.
Trainer Road membership. Just kidding.
He says, I currently use a carbon fiber specialized Roubaix with Garmin Vector pedals for outdoors on that bike. So Garmin Vector pedals are his power meter. My indoor setup is a specialized sector on a kinetic road machine with a pro flywheel using virtual power. For those that don't know, a sector is like a commuter bike. It's kind of like a road bike, but a little more upright position, and some of them come with flat bars, the whole deal.
And he's on a, is a endurance road bike.
Yes. Yep. And then he has the kinetic road machine with a pro flywheel. Do they still make the pro flywheel, Nate?
So the pro flywheel is the road machine. You can just kind of screw on this heavier flywheel and it gives you a more road-like feel.
Mm-hmm. And he's using virtual power indoors, and then he has his power meter on his bike outdoors. Now, he has Garmin Vector pedals, and those are probably some of, in theory, the easier power meters just to switch from bike to bike, but they've been known to be a bit finicky when they do that. So that might make sense why he's using two different bikes. So he says, my question, should I spend my money on another set of Vector power meters so I have consistent power to compare indoors and out? Or should I replace my road machine with a Wahoo kicker to gain the benefits of an electronic trainer? You often advocate the benefits of an electronic trainer, and if my goal is to get the maximum improvement for money spent, which option would be best? I do not race, but I am a very competitive recreational cyclist who likes long endurance rides. Thanks again for all your great work and your passion to make all of us faster cyclists. Sweet.
Yeah, so this is what I would do. So, right, but which is the last podcast we mentioned. We all do podcasts right next to our bikes. We like to stay within touching, so we can just touch them and massage them. But I have a S-Works Venge right behind me on a kicker. I like using the same power meter indoor and outdoors if you already have that power meter, just because then your power is the same. So I would sell your commuter bike or leave that as like a, I don't know, gravel bike or something like that. Use your Roubaix. And you could use your Roubaix totally on your kicker or on your road machine, excuse me, if you wanted to. Maybe you switch out the wheel that has a different skewer on it. That's perfectly fine. You could get a Wahoo kicker, but if you do that, I'd tell you to still pair your Garmin Vector. I wouldn't tell you to use your Wahoo kicker inside and your Garmin Vector's outside. Personally, I use 3 different quarks that are 3 different generations of quarks on my Wahoo kicker. And all of those quarks read about 30 watts lower than my kicker does. That's part of the reason why we have a feature called Power Match, which we send back in the difference into the kicker so that it and adjust the offset so that the kicker is putting at you what your power meter is reading. So totally put your Roubaix on the kicker. It's perfectly fine. I've never heard of a bike being hurt. That being said, I wouldn't go all out sprinting on it. Last episode, we talked about sprinting stuff. Save that for the road, but it doesn't sound like you really need to sprint so much. But yeah, you could have the road machine. I don't think the kicker will actually make you any faster compared to a road machine, but it is nicer. You don't have to pay as much attention, and you can kind of zone out a little bit. And especially on those endurance rides, it's a little bit easier so you don't like dive off. You still have to, if it's a very, you know, in something that's very intense, you still have to be 100% on. And the Row Machine 2 is actually a little bit better if you're doing very short, spiky, out of the saddle attacks or something, or like 10 second spike and then a 10 second off. The Row Machine is a little bit better than the kicker in that aspect. What do you guys think?
Yeah,
I agree. I think you've already got the power meter covered. So that base is covered, and I would just use that power meter whether I was indoors or out, which means your funds are freed up to buy another trainer. And I'm a big fan of as much the kicker as I am erg-based training. So it's nice to have the option to switch back to manual mode or slope mode and then into the erg mode.
That's
which basically does the thinking for you. So on those long rides where you might kind of daze off and your power could slip, or certain intervals where you simply don't want to work that hard, but the erg training locks you into that spot and you simply have to gut it out. I just think there are a lot of benefits that you get from erg mode, not necessarily kicker, but erg mode on any trainer that provides it that you can't have otherwise.
That's a really good point is on the kicker, you can, on workouts that do have some stuff where the kicker isn't the best at, you could switch it to slope or resistance mm-hmm. mode, and then it'll act just like a Row Machine. And you'll have to just shift and hit your targets that way.
Now, the one thing we do have to consider with Bill is that he has Garmin Vectors. If you had the first generation Vectors, they were known to be finicky. And I don't have any experience with this, but apparently the second gen ones are much better. So if you're looking, you know, you sell that specialized sector maybe, or you just don't use it on the trainer, whatever you want to do. If you want to put that extra cash into updated Garmin Vectors, that might be a good idea. But once again, I don't have any experience with this. They're known to be much more stable and consistent with their power readings in between installations from bike to bike. So,
this is probably another way. So, Chad, you can train on any trainer you want. Which trainer do you use?
Kicker.
Jonathan, you can train on any trainer you want. What do you use?
I use the kicker. Yep.
And I can use any trainer I want, and I use the kicker too.
Yeah. We have all of them here at the office.
Yeah, every single one.
Everything.
Yeah. The only thing I use other than that is I use rollers every once in a while and we've talked about this before, and that's when the workout is not precise at all, or when I just want to spin or work on something else. And that's mainly been because I have had a knee injury that stops me from doing very, you know, intense structured stuff.
Yeah, so we are a kicker family.
We don't use the kicker snap either. We like the wheel off design. I just like not having to worry about the wheel or slippage. Definitely.
Yeah, it's less issues there.
How many kickers do we have, Jonathan? Do you know?
I think we have 8 here.
No, but in general, all over. I want to say over 15.
Oh. Yeah, we have over,
Because people have them 15. At their houses and stuff, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a lot of them. And once again, and I want to be clear on this, we don't have any type of an accord with Wahoo. Zero.
We don't get money for it.
No, we don't.
That would be
just
nice.
And that's like we're hardware agnostic, and we are proud of that, and we stay to that, and we try to be as objective as possible. Whatever works best, that's what we like to use. And
that being said, for mechanical trainers, the ones that I like. So if you don't have that price point, and what I used before, I love the Row Machine and I love the Cyclops Jet Fluid Pro. Mm-hmm. Both of those, I like them for ritual power, and I like the price points on both those. They last really well, and I would feel very comfortable. We do as a company say either of those are great trainers.
Yeah, I used the Row Machine for a fair amount of time. Anytime I couldn't have an electronic trainer, it was always the Row Machine, and for race warm ups especially, but also indoor workouts, and I love that thing.
I used the Row Machine up until the kicker came out, but it's like you know, you can get a Row Machine for $300, kicker's $1,100. So
yeah,
and I. You know, it's one thing for us because it's for business. We're going to have them anyways, but I can see the price difference. It's a lot of money.
It's a lot. Of money. It is. Yeah, we're excited to see that new Cyclops Hammer trainer. We should be getting our hands on one soon, and hopefully we'll be able to give you some info on that too. We've got another kicker or another trainer question, forgive me. This comes from John. So this is not me, John. This is another one. So he says, Thanks for all the great products. You guys are killing it. I currently have a Cyclops Fluid 2 trainer. And remember, Nate mentioned the Jet Fluid Pro, and the Fluid 2 is a very different trainer than that. So he says, I currently have a Cyclops Fluid 2 trainer and would like to upgrade to a Wahoo Kicker or Tax Neo. I'm leaning toward the Neo because it's so quiet, but it seems like everyone loves the Kicker. Have any of you guys tried the Neo? And if so, would you recommend it over the Kicker?
The Neo's, I don't think it's good. Like, it's, I wouldn't say, oh, you know, don't buy the Neo. Like, if you have a good price point and you can get the Neo, you're going to probably be happy with it too. I don't know why we all just gravitate towards the Kicker rather than the Neo, but, and to the,
I have specific reasons. I got this one down.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I used the Neo for a couple weeks, and overall, I liked it, but I'm still partial to the Kicker. The Neo is incredibly quiet, though, so if noise is an issue, that's the way to go.
Yeah, that'd push you over the edge.
Yeah, for us at home, I'm thinking of different options since we're going to have our little one. Having said that, the Kicker can be really quiet if you are trained in a low gear, and that's kind of my plan. We have a little one coming in just about a month and a half, our first little one, so that'll be an important thing. But one thing that the Neo does that I think is really intelligent, however, in actual application, I don't like it as much. They don't have a flywheel. They use a bunch of magnets in an array, and then they try to estimate what your inertia would be. But the strange thing is if you stop pedaling, it just stops moving. There's no roll down or anything else like that. It stops very quickly. That may seem like not an issue if you keep pedaling, but it does feel like it's kind of like a lower inertia feel to it. It feels like it's got a little bit more like you're pedaling through mud a bit on it. You're putting out the same wattage. It's just a different feel to it. So that's one thing. The other thing that that steers me away from the Neo is the compatibility side of things. I can't use a through axle. And even though that's not a problem for most of us yet, our road bikes will be going through axles soon enough. It makes for a better chassis and stiffer and much better. And with the Neo, as of now, I don't know if this is something they can retrofit, but you can only use quick releases. You can't use through axles or wide rear ends, like a 142 or 148 mil wide rear end. And kind of compounding that, it's a pretty long trainer. It looks so cool. It looks like something from Star Wars. Like, it's pretty cool looking. But it's really long front to back. And on certain bikes with like really tall, or I should say just, you know, top to bottom high chainstays, there can be some clearance issues with that. I know on my previous mountain bike, it wouldn't have fit. I mean, it didn't fit anyway because they didn't do through axles, but it wouldn't have cleared. The chainstay wouldn't have cleared. It would have hit the unit. So on certain like TT bikes or aero bikes where you might have really deep section chainstays like that, you might have some clearance issues there. But man, it's quiet.
And if portability is an issue, the Kicker's going to be the way to go because the Kicker's got a handle on it. And yeah, it's heavy, but so's the Neo. The Neo, super hard to carry. I couldn't quite figure out a way to carry that thing without either getting grease on me or straining my back in some way. So the portability is a bit of an issue.
It can fold up nice and small. That's one nice thing.
Stores like really well. Yes.
Yep.
It's like if you're living in a condo or an apartment, like that's the trainer. Because you can kind of put it in a closet and it's super quiet.
Kicker stores well too, though. You fold those legs in, it gets pretty compact.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. This new Cyclops Hammer one that we just mentioned there, that one looks, I honestly got really excited. This is probably the smallest feature that for some people, but when it said it had a better or a balanced carrying handle, it was like choiring of angels in my head going off because I've carried Kickers so many times and with little cyclist arms carrying Kickers, it's not comfortable.
It's got to gain weight like Chad and I.
So hopefully that gives you some insight. It works well. Both of them work fantastically well. They just kind of different ways of going about it. So Glenn's question. He says, I've been reading about supercompensation and trying to conceive of a way to set something like this up on Trainer Road. What are your thoughts on supercompensation? Can we build programs on that take advantage of this system?
Yeah, Glenn, I got good news for you. Supercompensation is what each and every one of those training plans out there is about. It's just one of the general principles of training. So, I mean, lump it in with specificity and and overload, supercompensation is the end result of that. So that's what all those plans do. And all supercompensation is, you know, when you overreach, when you push your current boundaries. So maybe right now you can accumulate 10 minutes total over an interval workout at 120% of threshold. But then you find a way to accumulate 12 minutes with different types of intervals, different rest periods or something. So you're pushing yourself to new levels, new heights. That pushes you to a point where your body is dealing with a stress to which it's unaccustomed, and it has to rebound. And that's the supercompensation aspect of it. So all the plans are progressive in nature, meaning they get a little tougher as you work through the plan, then they rest you, then you come back a little refreshed, and they get even tougher. Each phase gets a little more demanding in different ways, all geared around supercompensation. So we've already got that base covered for you, Glenn.
What is supercompensation, Chad? Yeah. Can you define it for us?
Come again?
What is supercompensation? Like, can you define it for us or tell us what it is?
So basically, you're like I said before, you're imposing a stress to which your body's unaccustomed, something it hasn't done before, and basically signaling, you know, physiologically and genetically that your body has to be capable of more. So you basically regenerate and come back stronger. So by applying a greater load than your body's used to, it actually rebuilds and becomes used to that load and basically strengthens. And you just keep on repeating that cycle over and over, and that supercompensation leads to higher levels of fitness.
Glenn might too be talking about where in just a few days or a week you put on even more stress than you would in a normal training plan. It's not sustainable stress that you could do all year.
Oh yeah, so you're talking kind of like a crash
like training
cycle.
Camps. Yeah,
exactly.
Like training camps.
Same idea. So. Yeah, so if you're looking to push your that level of overreaching even farther, knowing that you're going to recover even more intensely or effectively, then that's just another that's a more specialized form of supercompensation. So in that case, we're addressing something more specific, because if we're going to increase the training load in a general sense, you know, we can't just heap on tons of everything. We have to kind of concentrate it down to those particular things that you want to address. And then we really overdo it. So in the case of VO2 or maybe endurance riding, so maybe you ride 8 hours a week during a supercompensation block. Maybe you'll ride for 12, 16 hours a week, knowing that you're going to rest excessively in relatively speaking after that block.
That part's
ends.
Key. That part's key, right, Chad, is that supercompensation isn't just overloading your body, but you have to allow your body, or to effectively utilize supercompensation.
Yeah,
have to give your body a chance to absorb.
The supercompensation comes in the recovery. That's when your body is overcompensating for the stress that you inflicted on it previously. So the supercompensation is the aftermath of the training itself.
And we're working on, Chad's working on right now, developing training camps that you can do with our software that would kind of have that really high dose of stress. I really like those for, and we get this question a lot, hey, I'm going to go sit on the beach for a week, right? I have a vacation coming up. I can't bring my bike. What do I do? Hey, do one of these training camps and really destroy yourself before, and then sit on the beach and relax, knowing that you're just getting more fit as your body recovers. That could work for work travel too, as long as work travel is not super duper stressful. But there's a lot of situations where you know you can't work out for that time, even a busy work a week. So maybe I'm going to work on my anaerobic power for the week ahead of that and just really kill it. Or I could redo one of the 8DC that we have, the 8 days in California, right before my vacation or my trip or my work trip or something like that.
A training camp prior to some sort of escape like that, where you know it's actually going to be relaxing, is such a fantastic way to bump yourself up to a new level of performance. And the beauty of it is you beat yourself up, then you go enjoy yourself, and you come back and you're actually fitter than when you left.
And refreshed mentally.
Salvo, Adam Salvo, who was one of our engineers, he's going to go on a trek travel trip with his wife. So they're going to go to the Canary Islands and ride like tons of miles for a week. And then kind of go walk around Spain for a little bit. And that's like such a cool, I told my wife that last night, like, we got to try that when our kids can, get my kids going, maybe get a bike stroller or something for 100 miles. But that's a really cool way to have a vacation, is work out really hard and then kind of go see the sights while you're recovering.
Yeah, no doubt. And that super compensation, that it isn't specifically just volume. I mean, there are benefits that we're talking about, like, or I should say, it doesn't just have to be a lot of volume necessarily, but it's volume and intensity, right, Chad? I mean, usually it comes hand in hand, both of them, but.
Yeah, you can super compensate or, you know, force super compensation in a whole host of manners.
Cool. All right, Perry's question. He says, I have about 4 weeks left before a 110-mile gravel race. I just found out the course has long, steady climbs. I'm currently using the rolling road race plan in your specialty phase. Is there a better plan for long, steady climbs, or should I stay on the one I am currently on?
Perry, there's a plan that's just definitely more geared toward those longer, sustained climbs. It's the, you know, the... I'm totally blanking. The climbing road race
sustained
plan.
Climb.
Sustained power build, and then the climbing road race plan has the more sustained climbs. So, you can cut over. You're basically looking for sustained power. You're still going to build a high level of fitness and be able to hold a higher level of power, but it might be something you're a little unaccustomed to, having not done long stretches at pretty high percentages of threshold. So if you've still got 4 weeks and you're coming off a recovery week, it's not a bad idea to cut over to that plan. You could even do the first 4 weeks of that plan rather than the latter 4 weeks, since those are going to be the harder versions of it. You might want that taper, though, and maybe just a single week of that taper, depending on how much volume you're doing. But there's no harm in cutting over, but I don't think it's going to be some big deal if you don't. The fitness is still going to be there. They'll just be a little slightly outside of your wheelhouse.
So climbing road race, that's what it's called.
Yep.
I think that's what you said.
One. That's what I said.
And I'm wrong.
The one thing that I've noticed, Perry, is that with just 3 to 4 weeks of shifting focus, I've personally seen results. And actually last year, I did the opposite of what you're doing. I went from, perhaps not as severe, but I went from general build. And then I actually ended up switching over to a short power build and going through with for some more cross country stuff. The adaptations came pretty quick in that sense, to accustoming myself to putting out big amounts of power for shorter amounts of time. I think that you'll probably see some benefits there for sure. But Chad, like Chad said, the taper part is definitely key to pay attention to. If you know how you respond to specific tapers, if you know that you do well with a short one or a long one or anything else, certainly don't just, you know, throw that information out since you've changed your training plan. Try to keep that information there to have that grain of salt. Would you say so, Chad? I mean,
yeah, basically how much, if you're coming into it carrying a lot of stress, if you've been doing a lot of work, then a longer taper is typically up your alley. And then if you're like on a low volume plan, a 2 week taper might not be absolutely necessary. And those 2 week tapers don't trim as much volume off quite as quickly as the mid volume and high volume tapers do.
Great. All right. James' question. He says, first off, I totally love Trainer Road. It's allowed me to continue productively riding. I like that, productively riding. That's important. While the kids are in bed. Every time the next workout comes up in my training plan, I wonder how Chad comes up with the names. Can you reveal the secret? Maybe a fun social.
I can do it.
And then he says, so maybe if.
It was actually
hold
Nate,
on, Nate.
Nate did this initially, so I have just furthered this trend.
And he says maybe a fun social campaign to get people to suggest new ones. So we'll see. Mm-hmm.
Well, so the names of these workouts are all peaks in the Sierra Nevada mountain range. At least they were at first until we ran out of peaks. And then we then moved around the world. We try to stay away from the famous climbs like Alpe d'Huez or something like that, but they're all, you know, the Geiger and Rose. Those are two climbs or two peaks right around in Reno, and Peavine, that's another one that we ride on a lot. But in general, I like the idea of naming them after peaks, because if you name workouts what they are, if you look at some of those workouts, they can get so complex and it could be like 5 times 4 minutes with, you know, 1 minute bursts of this at FTP, you know, it just gets to be like this math formula. Yeah.
And everyone does it differently too. Everyone does it slightly differently. So you never know what you're looking at.
So it's way easier just to say Peavine and Geiger, and then everyone can be on the same path. And I got this from CrossFit does the same thing, is they have incredibly complex and they use women's names. So they might say, we're doing Fran today. And then everyone knows what Fran is. But it's so much easier to say that than to say, you know, I'm overhead press and pull-ups and this much with this time, you know. So that's why we do it. And peaks are just kind of fun.
Out of peaks, right, Chad?
Yeah, I do like the idea of the social campaign. Hoping that people can dig up some different peaks that I can't find.
No, there's
online.
Plenty of peaks. We'll find some in like Asia. And, I mean, there's plenty of peaks all over the world. Yeah, I thought the next true. One too. We could move on to rivers.
We probably won't run out of peaks. I'm kind of running that well dry anyways. Now it's just alternate versions of existing workouts. Not so many new workouts. Yeah.
I think you've created almost 1,000. So, I mean, how many can you do?
We're good.
I just created two new ones, two new workouts the other day. They're warm-up workouts. You can find them if you sort by warm-ups in our workout feed. And it took me from up here, so Northern California, Nevada area, all the way down to San Bernardino before I found a peak that Chad hadn't pillaged already. So, and then I ended up settling for just the name of a pass, Cajon Pass, on one of them. So, yeah, it's tricky. But yeah, that's where it comes from, James. And maybe we will at some point, leave it open to people. We'll see. That could be a fun thing for Snapchat maybe. But all right, Paul says, why do I keep getting flats on my trainer? And Paul has like 5 question marks after that. So I assume you're quite upset, Paul. We'll see if we can help. He says, I'm using a dedicated trainer specific tire pumped up to about 110 plus pounds on a CompuTrainer. Spin down force is usually somewhere around 2.5. I've gotten about 3 flats in the last couple of months. Today there was a split on the tire on the side of the tube running perpendicular to the tire rotation across the tire. So you got a split across it. Last time it was a leak at the base of the valve stem. It kind of appears that the tube is experiencing shear from the force of the roller. Always seems to happen right in the middle of a hard set of intervals. Any ideas?
Yeah, Paul, I've had quite a bit of experience with CompuTrainers, and your press-on force is 2.5, which is on the slightly lower side of things, so I don't think that's it. Honestly, tire quality and tube quality and maybe even the inside of the rim, maybe there's something going on in there, although these are all different incidences. I don't know.
I was just going to suggest rim. Yeah, I was going to suggest something with his rim.
Rim tape?
It's rim tape is super cheap. You can go to your bike shop. You just have to ask them for it. Rubber rim strips aren't really that great for this, but you can get cotton rim tape that they'll put on there.
Yeah, Velox really nice makes and a soft good one. Stuff.
Yep. Yeah. And that'll smooth things out. Also, feel free to take that off and then check out your rim. And if you see any spots, you can have a bike shop go through and smooth those spots out with, you know, a file or something else if you have any sharp edges that are developed. Also, I think the trainer tires are usually, they do suggest somewhere around 110 PSI. Certainly look at whatever it says on the tire and run that. That's just a general tip for everybody. Don't run 100 pounds because 100 pounds. Run whatever the tire says that you should be running there and stick to that. That's one tip. But
I would look up to maybe try changing tubes. I know in the CompuTrainer it gets extremely hot, and that it'll really heat up your wheel. So if maybe you have a tube where the glue is coming apart when it gets too hot, or that's what I'm thinking. Especially where you're saying sometimes it's sheared. I haven't had experience like this where I don't know. Could be a combination of the rim and heat going into the tube.
Yeah, certainly. And that heat's going to cause the pressure to increase even more in that tube, right? So that's another thing to keep in mind. So,
I would switch to tubeless too. Like make it, I know you wouldn't have the trainer tire, but I would, if you keep getting these.
Yeah. And one way to make your non-tubeless rims tubeless, which it's not the best idea, especially if you're riding outside, because the design of sidewalls and rims has totally changed to go hookless instead of having hooks on the beads hooks on the rims that actually hook into the bead of the tire. But you can run some black duct tape and just run it down the center of your tire. And as ghetto as that sounds, actually works pretty darn well. And you'd be surprised at how many pro riders do that to their bikes. But you can do that and set it up tubeless. The one thing that I would only point out is the fact that since you're dealing with a lot of heat and that tubeless sealant, it'll dry it out pretty quick. And you'll get a weird sea urchin crustacean little creature inside your tire that bounces around because the sealant will cook quick. And then if it does pop, then you'll have cooked latex sealant all over everything, which will be kind of annoying to deal with. But
I have a question. Chad, what are you drinking? It's like this purple thing.
Yeah, it's what's it called? A Nutribullet or whatever. Those new, or I don't know how new they are. Those blenders, they're super good blenders. You're supposed to fill it up with half of the container with leafy greens and then whatever fruits and vegetables you want to put in it. Mix it with some water, ice, and then blend it. It's just a really easy way to get fruit and vegetables, and I'm not a big fan of either unless they're in a really palatable format. And this certainly qualifies. It's really delicious. It's got some bean cherries in it.
Yeah, what'd you put in yours?
It's mostly kale. Then I think there's a little piece of banana, a bit of apple, some tart red cherries, and that could be it.
Did you just grind it with the seeds and the cherries?
Yeah, this blender is kind of legit. You kind of flip the container upside down and just compress it a few times, and it does the job rapidly and really well. So it's really easy to drink pretty much anything.
Yeah, we have one of those at home too. And we have a blend tech, which is like the one that'll blend golf clubs and stuff, or a brick. Then we find that the bullet, it's more convenient. Mm-hmm. So we use it more often because of the cleaning. You just drink out of the thing that you actually mixed it in.
Yeah, it makes it really easy.
We have a juicer too. We don't use the juicer very much because it's such a pain in the butt to clean. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's a mess. And then, and on juice side of things too, you're not getting... You don't have the option of getting everything out of it that you should. So, all right, David's question. He says, "Hi guys. First off, I love the podcast and look forward to it each week. Keep it up. I started using Trainer Road back in February with sweet spot base mid volume as one of our training plans. My best power for the 8-minute test was 203 watts. I'm 5'7" and weighed 172 pounds at the time. I just completed sweet spot base and started on short power build, high volume. My new 8-minute power is 281 watts, an improvement of 78 watts. Nice job, man. Holy cow. It's a huge improvement. I now weigh 163 pounds. So my question is, should I expect a larger improvement in power going into the build phase, or am I approaching diminishing returns?
Yeah, David, the improvement you saw over the first segment of your training is probably going to be the biggest one you've seen. Typically, we don't see a huge increase, you know, at least relative to build. We don't see a huge increase in the base period. Build is where you heap on more stress and often see more fitness. But you saw a big jump initially, which leads me to believe that you're maybe not off the couch, but that your training has lacked structure in the past. And now lending structure to it has given you this big increase. But unfortunately, you're not going to be able to expect increases that large for phase to phase. That's a big jump, and having another jump that big is pretty unlikely. It's not to say you won't see some improvement. You're still going to see some good improvement, but I don't think it's going to be quite that massive.
Yeah, if you keep jumping up like that, like one more jump and you're going to be a national rider like that, and then one more jump and you're in the Tour de France. And then one more jump and you're winning the Tour de France. And another one and you're
getting popped for doping.
Yeah. Well, winning Tour de France probably popped too, but it happens to everyone. And that's what I want to say too, to people that they can, someone who's more, we've had it happen before where somebody goes, "Oh, I got a 40 watt increase and you got a 10 watt increase or a 5 watt increase." 5 watts might've been harder for you to get than it's like, this happened to me. I was coming from a year and a half about of not training, and I got a big jump kind of like this. But Chad, if Chad, increases his maximum FTP by 10 watts over the whole year, Chad's like pretty stoked, right?
Pretty stoked, yeah.
Yeah, same with you, Jonathan, right?
Yep.
Year. Anyone at the really high level?
Last year, I went from 309 to 315. And that was the difference between me getting mid to back of the pack in nationals to getting fourth. It's a small number, right? But it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, during my banner year, toward the end of the season, I was at 370 FTP, and then a month, 5 weeks later, I got it up to 383, and I destroyed myself for that additional 13% or 13 watts, which is a small percentage. And it was everything I had. And after that, I fully derailed. It blew me up.
Mm-hmm. You still raced a lot better with just those 13 watts?
No real obvious difference, quite frankly.
Oh. Hmm. Well, Jonathan, yeah, I wonder why you did so much better. Were you more specific?
Yeah, that was the big thing for me was getting rid of the junk and being more disciplined with it, because I had done the structured training before, and I talked about this last episode, I started being disciplined with, and I know this is just semantics, but it had a change. I started being disciplined with defining when I was training and defining when I was riding. And that allowed me to be objective and honest with myself about how much time I was actually dedicating to training instead of just riding. It made it pretty easy to break down and see where I had room to improve and where I could kind of redistribute some things and kind of balance my training with my life better.
Another thing you did, and tell me when you did this, is you said you started riding on the kicker at a low gearing to replicate the low inertia that you get on mountain biking. And you attribute that to helping your mountain biking. When did you start that?
I started doing that. So I came in January, or all the way up until January of last year, I was training in a high gear on a road bike. So big ring, middle of the cassette in the back. And then my first mountain bike race was at Benelli Park, the UCI round that they had down there. And for those that have ridden that course, you'd laugh compared to here. The hills aren't that tall, but they're 30% climbs and they're 15 or 20 seconds long. And you only have 5 seconds in between them, it seems. And you have that for, 2 hours. And those climbs were so brutal. And I was moving at like 4 miles an hour, just barely creeping up these things, even slower than that. And that's when I felt that day like I wasn't even on the same planet as the guys that were leading the race. I switched at that point, changed my gearing so that I was always in the little ring, and then I was way up on the cassette. And that started to make a big difference. And then the guys that won that first race of the year, I was with them and beating them at the end of the year. So yeah, I had 6 or 7 months. That was a huge thing. It's kind of the whole concept of marginal gains, but with specificity toward your event. I knew that with cross country mountain biking, I had to dedicate, like we talked about the inertia, but I had to dedicate time to just riding and working on skills or just training power. And I had to be objective on all that. So yeah. So I guess that would be my tip. But David, you're going to see diminishing returns in terms of numbers, but you're not going to see diminishing returns regarding an ROI on your investment in time. If that makes sense.
Ideally,
when you
David,
put in time, you're going to get benefit.
So. Yeah, exactly. So while the level of improvement may start to come down, your fitness and your performance should continue to go up.
Mm-hmm. And you'll get to a point like Chad, where Chad knows that if he eases off now, then he drops. It's not as much the sky's the limit, he's continuing going up, but he knows that if he eases off, he loses that edge that makes the huge difference on race day. Mm-hmm. So,
now, Chad, you need a 78 watt increase in your...
yeah, that'd be awesome.
That'd be out riding the Tour of California right now.
Yeah. All right. Antonio, he says, good morning, gents. First, I would like to congratulate you on a great podcast. I'm a mountain biker that has taken on racing a couple years ago, and I've gotten hooked. I'm having a blast. I'm seeing huge gains with different workouts on Trainer Road. Recently, I acquired a Complex Sport Elite, or a Compex Sport Elite. Compex, what are those the tens units, Chad?
Yeah, actually, I think that's what that is. I knew it rung a bell.
Ah, gotcha. Perfect. He says, so far, yeah, I've been using it for warm-up and recovery purposes, but I'd like to see if I could use it to increase endurance and boost my climbing power. I will be entering base training next week in Arizona. We mostly race in the fall and winter. And I'd like to introduce some electrostimulation sessions to build that muscle endurance and strength. Do you know of any training programs that could be used, or how I should introduce that into my current base plan, which is composed of high intensity interval training sessions, core work, and outside training rides? Thanks for your help, Antonio.
Sure, Antonio. The only way that I have ever utilized one of these, and everybody I work with and have worked out with utilizes these, is for recovery, to facilitate recovery processes. So I just follow his sessions with it. And unfortunately, I don't do it consistently enough to be able to attribute any noticeable improvement in performance. And when I do think it's helping. There are other factors, so I can't directly attribute it just to the TEMS unit, the muscle stimulation. But I do know a fair amount of my teammates and CrossFitters are very big on this. This the Mark Pro machines, for instance, they use them for after their hard workouts to facilitate recovery. And some of these people swear by them. Personally, I can't advocate or deny their efficacy.
Yeah, have you guys seen any like scientific studies?
Never
not,
have.
Not ones that weren't clearly biased.
Yeah, that's the thing. And it's kind of a tough thing to do. So I've used them before. To be honest, I always wonder if, because usually you have to be laying down or stable or still when you're using it. So, you know, you using this necessitates that you are also laying down or in a position to actually be recovering. So it's hard to separate any type of benefit that you might be getting there. And now, granted, I know people that swear by these things and say that they work really well. Just in my personal experience, I haven't seen it. And then I also haven't seen the studies that are, you know, third-party studies that aren't biased, that are objective.
And that's the good point right there is so you're using it for recovery and you say, oh, no, this definitely facilitates recovery. I feel better. Well, what else are you doing at that same time? Are you now sitting and whereas you would have been standing or cooking dinner?
Yeah.
Are you hydrating better because you're sitting? Exactly. There are other things that usually go hand in hand with it. Those could be where you're deriving the actual benefit. Could be this unit, could be a combination of it. I can't say for sure.
Is it supposed to be like make your legs be less sore the next time you come through, like feel a little fresher, the muscles?
And I think the idea is that it brings nutrients in and waste products out by low-level muscle activity.
Yeah, so promotes circulation through that. And then the whole kind of pitch behind that is the fact that it's involuntary contractions, so therefore it doesn't cause any type of fatigue, but yeah, it's kind of a
I'd like to try it on one leg,
because right,
you know what I mean, like yeah, just like if it's supposed to make it feel better, try it on one leg every time. And then I always feel like to test how sore I am, I like flex my quads and I can really tell. Right,
yeah.
And you'd think you'd be able to tell that one side then would feel better, but I don't know if that then translates into performance.
Right, exactly. That's a really
good
point.
That's the other half of the equation. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it does it actually make you faster? So, Antonio, just one thing, don't use it when you're driving. A lot of people use it like when they're driving back from the race, and I've ridden with those people and I get very sick because
Dave's going to edit this podcast later, and he's the first person who allowed me to experience the joy of someone who's on the accelerator, off the accelerator, on the accelerator. And we're talking like
that sounds
many,
so dangerous.
Many times a minute.
Yeah, it's not pleasant. So, but good luck with your mountain bike season, Antonio. At some point, I'd love to come down there and race in Phoenix or in that area. We have
just one more thing on this, and they don't even say, or do they? Do they claim that it will actually increase strength rather than recovery?
So there are two different things in the CrossFit world. You see a lot of marketing saying that it will increase strength. In the cycling world,
you're gonna be able to squat like 400 pounds if I.
I'm not sure if they have any claims like that, but it's definitely pushed more versus the cycling world. It's much more pushed toward recovery, and I think that's just intelligent marketing.
That's so funny, right? Because the CrossFit world wants to be stronger, and the cycling world wants recovery.
Yeah, I don't see strength gains. I mean, the stress on the muscle fiber is so incomparable. They're so different. You put yourself under a 400-pound squat rack. You put yourself on a little TEMS unit that's just firing the muscle at a low level. I don't see how the two compare.
If you do this blind test with one leg, Antonio, and you find out it doesn't work, don't go out and smash all our dreams.
It can't be blind.
Well, yeah, you're not blind. Yeah. But if you do this test,
you test
one leg and the other. Yeah. Don't smash our dreams. Don't tell me that those ab belts don't work and everything else. So, Kevin, would your overall FTP be different depending if you are using a compact crank versus a non-compact crank on the same bike? Thanks. Your podcasts are awesome.
No, Kevin, I don't see why. Fitness is fitness, whether or not you're using one gearing ratio or even crank length versus another, fitness is still fitness.
Yeah, so FTP is different. FTP is your lactate threshold in terms of power. So it's not going to adjust your lactate threshold. Now, granted, if you have, now you're talking about chain rings, and chain rings, it shouldn't matter at all. If you're talking about crank length, then your body's ability to put out power, it might be a slightly different muscle recruitment pattern or something, or just longer, different ratios. Yeah. But
I went super short cranks on my TT bike so that my knees wouldn't hit. And I think I went 165s, so 175 down to 165s. And it took me a little bit of time to get used to them. But after I used to them, I was fine. But at first, it felt kind of weird. And I couldn't put up the power.
Chain rings shouldn't make a difference, though, as far as gearing, because you should be able to, you'll be offsetting that gearing with the back.
Yeah.
Yep. Granted, also, I guess one thing, it goes without saying, hopefully here, but Kevin, if you're going from a compact versus a non-compact and you're out of gears, then your ability to perform may be definitely hindered, but that probably is only coming into play on very steep climbs. So, hopefully that gives it a comprehensive look at it. So. Doug's question. He says, I find that the long endurance rides at the end of the week for most plans conflict with a busy schedule, kids, work, etc. And I rarely have time to complete those longer rides. I've been adding short 30 to 60 minute endurance or recovery rides after my interval rides throughout the week so that I end up with the required total hours for that week. Is this detrimental to my fitness? Should I just get those endurance rides in when the time allows? Outstanding podcast. I've wanted someone to put something out like this for years. Always a highlight of the week when a new episode comes out. Thanks.
Doug, there's no reason they should be detrimental to your fitness unless you're doing them in a fatigue state that leads to more fatigue. So if they're coming at the expense of higher quality workouts, then it's a concern. Otherwise, there's some benefit to doing them in a fatigue state, some aerobic benefit and it cellular genetic levels. There's a lot going on with those, and they can be very beneficial. It's just a question of how they influence the rest of your work, and then obviously the overall trend of your fitness.
But so, I guess to be clear on this, Chad, so it's cool that he's doing that, but would it be better, we kind of talked about this before, to those long endurance rides to kind of string that all together if he could?
Yeah, you know what? I'm sorry. I kind of misread the question there, Doug. It's a different type of stress. When you say you have a 3-hour ride, we're looking for a type of fatigue that doesn't occur when you do a bunch of shorter rides. So there's recovery that goes on between those shorter rides. And the shorter rides by their nature don't stress, in this case, your slow twitch fibers in the way that the longer rides do. There's a level of depletion of fatigue that comes with longer continuous mileage that you're not going to get with those shorter rides. The way they add up, though, I mean, you're still getting the volume in. And if you do maybe that 60 minutes after a higher intensity ride, you're going to have some of the fatigue that we were already looking for built in, so to speak. So you can derive much of the benefit, but they it's not apples and oranges exactly. It's maybe just different kinds of apples.
And my wife, she, you know, the kids and stuff, and she will wake up literally 4 a.m., 4:30 a.m. on Saturday and run her half marathon or do her long bike ride just so she can do it before the kids get up. So it is possible. It sucks, though. Like, I don't know how she does it. I can't do that. I feel your pain, Doug.
It's dedication. Dedication.
Yeah, totally.
All right. And then we're going to keep it short this week. So this will be the last question. He says, Brendan says, hello. I love the podcast and the Trainer Road application. 5 stars. Thanks, Brendan. I've been listening to all the episodes and I've been using Trainer Road for structure workouts with a kicker since January of this year. I've completed the sweet spot base 1 and 2 low volume plans. And I've started the sustained power build plan, and he's doing low volume there as well. My wife was diagnosed with type 2, and that's type 2 diabetes, last July, and also uses Trainer Road for general fitness. She, in fact, wanted her own kicker so we could ride together. This is a generic question. In episode 18, you mentioned that diabetics see all kinds, and in quotes, he says, all kinds of things with heart rates. Could you provide some more info as to what you were referring to? Of course, I know the full disclaimer. You're not doctors, so this is easy. We just can read your words instead of ours here, Brendan. But you're not doctors, and you do not know her specific condition. Love the app and podcast. Please keep them coming. If you'd be willing to send any specific links to read up on additional information around training, heart rate, and diabetes, please email them to me, and we will be sure to send those to you, Brendan.
Yeah, Brendan, as you said, I'm definitely not an expert on this matter. I've had a fair amount of dealings with diabetics, fair amount of dealings with endurance athletes, not a whole lot of overlap, unfortunately. What I learn about it is kind of on the spot. Someone asks a question, I'll research that particular question. And I think in this case, it was that diabetics typically have a higher waking heart rate, I think it was. I don't know, Jonathan, if you remember. But in any case, my go-to resources are, for this, I think I found the answer on PubMed.gov, which is where I find most of my answers and do a whole lot of my research. But there was also a site called diabetesforecast.org, and I found that to be a pretty good resource on the resource on this matter as well. So I'd consider checking those out. Unfortunately, I don't think I can be too much more help to you guys.
Yeah, Brendan, we'll see if we can dig anything up and send it to you, and we'll send you the links, but then also in that email, we'll see if we can dig up some anecdotes. I may know a few folks that may have some info for you, but once again, anecdotal stuff from them. So
yeah, it's worth researching. It's definitely an interesting topic, and I'd like to be more versed on it for sure. But at the moment, my knowledge is pretty limited.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us this week, everybody. Remember, you can submit your questions to us at trainerroad.com/podcast or use the hashtag AskTrainerRoad. We'll do our best to answer your questions. We comb through all of them, and we try to answer the ones that would provide the most benefit to the most people. So, yeah, and also interesting ones, too. And if you praise us, that doesn't hurt, I'm sure. So, so yeah, you can find us on there, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, everywhere else. Share the podcast, listen to it there. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.